Well, I think we're ready here, Ottawa Carlton. So formally, on behalf of Edmonton Public, the board, the district, welcome to this historic occasion. We're absolutely delighted that this conversation is finally about to unfold after many months of consideration. I think what we've, what the board chair, Jennifer McKenzie, and I have agreed to is that we would begin this hour, which is going to be fairly structured. We want to maximize the outcome of this hour in terms of conversation and sharing of perspectives. But we'll begin by undertaking some introductions. And so, Jennifer, I would ask you to facilitate an introduction of your board and the people sitting with you at your board table today.
Well, good evening, everybody in Edmonton, and good evening to everybody who's here. I'm very delighted to be here this evening as we do our first joint board meeting between the two school boards, Ottawa-Carlton and Edmonton. We are very pleased to be presenting an overview of our Creativity and Leadership Initiative tonight, thanks to our two senior staff members who I will introduce in a few minutes. And I hope that you enjoy it. I would like to take a few minutes to introduce our trustees before we begin, and I will start over in the corner with our student trustees. So go ahead.
So Bill Lynn, student trustee.
Kareem Ibrahim, student trustee.
Lynn Scott, trustee for Zone 1, which is the rural western area of the board.
Kathy Curry, trustee Zone 2, Kanata.
Donna Blackburn, trustee for Zone 3, Barrhaven, Knoxville, Maryvale.
Teresa Cavanaugh, Zone 4, which is Bay Ward.
Bronwyn Funicello, trustee for Zone 6, Alta Vista, Rideau, Rockcliffe.
And then to my right.
Mark Fisher, Zone 7, which is Gloucester Southgate, Osgood Township, and Gloucester South Nepean.
John Shea, trustee for Orleans Cumberland, which is the suburban and rural east part of the board.
Rob Campbell, representing two city wards, Capital and Rideau Vanier, both downtown.
Shirley Seward, representing River Zone, which is Zone number 11.
Katie Holzhauer, trustee for Zone 12, which is Serville, Beacon Hill, and Blackburn Hamlet, which is in the suburban east end.
And we do have one trustee missing tonight, and she's very sorry that she couldn't be here. Her name is Pam Fitzgerald. Myself, my name is Jennifer McKenzie, and I represent Zone 10, which is an inner city zone. And I have to my right our director of education,
Okay, I think you've completed your introductions, but over the last few seconds, Jennifer, your audio tailed off quite significantly. So I don't know what adjustments you can make at your end, but just to let you know that we had some audio challenges as your introductions neared the end.
All right, were there any you would like us to repeat, or are you...
No, and actually, the audio quality picked up quite significantly just now when you spoke.
Yeah, I think we have to remember to pause between our sentences as we did this morning.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure how successful I will be in getting my board to pause in their remarks, but
all right.
Apparently we didn't have that audio difficulty, so that's fine. And so I will turn down to our board table to my right. And we have seven of the nine members of our board here this evening. Trustee Heather McKenzie and Trustee Michael Jans extend their regrets. But I will ask Trustee Cheryl Johnner at the far end to introduce herself, and then we'll move along the board and have everyone at the board table introduce themselves. Cheryl?
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Johnner, and I've been a trustee for 1 year, and my ward is Ward 8, and it's north central part of the city.
Trustee Ken Shipka, Edmonton Northeast.
Christopher Spencer, I represent the area of west central Edmonton. Over.
Trustee Ripley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Catherine Ripley, I represent the southwest of Edmonton, and this is my fifth year as a trustee.
I'm Edgar Schmidt, superintendent for Edmonton Public Schools.
Thank you. Sarah Hoffman, I'm the trustee for Ward G, which is southeast Edmonton.
Ann Sherwood, board secretary.
Thank you. I'm Trustee Leslie Cleary. I'm currently serving my first term, and my ward is southeast Edmonton, in particular attention to 10 neighborhoods in an area called Mill Woods, including Ellerslie and Summerside, which is nearing the city limits and really close now to the Edmonton International Airport.
Thank you, Trustee Cleary. My name is Dave Colburn. I am the board chair, serving my second, third term, rather, as a trustee, and I represent an inner city ward. For those who may not have the agenda of this 1 hour before them, I'm just going to quickly run through what the structure of this 1 hour conversation is going to look like. In a few seconds, we will turn it over to Ottawa Carleton to deliver a 20-minute presentation on a journey they've had in the world of creativity. That will be followed by a 10-minute Q&A coming from the Edmonton Public Board directed to Ottawa Carleton. Questions will be limited to 1 minute and answers limited to 2 minutes. We will then have a member of our administration deliver a 10-minute presentation on some aspects of creativity within Edmonton Public. That will be followed by a 10-minute Q&A coming from the Ottawa Carleton Board. And then we will close. Have I missed anything, Jennifer?
That sounds about right to me.
Okay, great. Well, then, with no further ado, I see we've got a whole minute and a half in the bank compared to that 8 minutes that we had scheduled for this. I will turn it over to you for the Ottawa Carleton presentation.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm very proud and pleased to be able to introduce two of our superintendents here tonight. Peter Gammel, our superintendent of instruction, who would be on your screen to the left. We have the cameras aimed that way. And Pino Bohoni, who's our superintendent of curriculum services, who would be on the screen to your right. And I'll turn it over to you two gentlemen.
Thank you very much indeed. On behalf of Superintendent Pino Bohoni and myself, we would like to express our sincere appreciation for the opportunity to showcase the work that we're doing on leadership and creativity at the Ottawa Carleton District School Board. We'd also like to take this opportunity to express our appreciation to the chair of our board, Jennifer McKenzie, for inviting us to participate in this discussion, and of course, our great appreciation to our director, Dr. Jennifer Adams, who in her new position has already embraced the importance of ensuring creativity is embedded into all aspects of the district, and I think most importantly, of course, into our instructional strategies and practice. There are, of course, many people who have contributed to the work we have underway and to the journey that we've been on so far, and although we're not going to name them all today, our appreciation for their unique contributions must be noted. I'd like to add that throughout the presentation, we will be making links to what we've learned from the Leadership for Creativity Initiative to our strategic plan at the district, WELL, which focuses on four key pillars: well-being, engagement.
I'm just going to interrupt you, Pino, for a sec. The audio, we're starting to get some significant feedback, and based upon our experience this morning, it may be that you are leaning too close to your mic.
Thank you. I'll start again, and let me know, please, if it's not any better. Wanted to mention that as a learning organization, we are making links with what we're learning through the Leadership for Creativity Initiative to our strategic plan as a district with four key pillars: well-being, engagement, leadership, and learning that we'll reference throughout the presentation, and also to our board improvement plan for student achievement, and ultimately to the school improvement plans for student achievement across our district.
It's worthy of note, I think, that the catalyst for this entire movement began as a leadership initiative, which I'll describe in a second, but it was a while into it, a couple of years into it, before we really started to understand that it had huge, huge implications, not only for leadership, both formal and informal, but for creativity generally as a catalyst for learning in classrooms and across the organization. In 2006, when the then director, Lauren Reckless, asked me to take the lead role for leadership, I came away from that meeting thinking, well, where do you start with something like this? So I spoke to several of my colleagues, Superintendent now Frank Wiley, most notably, and we thought, well, if we're going to talk about leadership, we really need to get an idea of what people understand by leadership. So we brought together a group of about 20, 24 people from across all of the employee groups in our district, and we posed the question, what do you understand by leadership? At the end of that meeting, that very first meeting, with something very crucial happened. One of our custodians who was in the meeting made a statement to the fact that he didn't really know why he was there. He didn't understand his role, how his role, and he felt certain that his colleagues wouldn't understand how their roles played into leadership, into the formal structures of leadership. That made us take a very, very close look at ourselves. And it was a critical moment. We then decided we needed to do a much broader themed study of leadership across the district. And that happened in 2006. We're going to describe that first. We're going to go through the purpose of the study, the process, findings, recommendations, our pathways since then, and the actions that were taken. I want to note that the committee itself devised the questions that you're going to hear right now, and then we got an external group to write the report. It's the Gandalf group who did that. So could you go to the slide, purpose of study there? Thanks very much. So the first purpose of the study was to develop an understanding of how leadership is perceived and understood by individuals and groups within the OCDSB. Essential because if you want to encourage the practice of leadership by all people in the organization, then it's the first essential to gain an understanding of how that leadership is understood.
We also wanted to apply the learnings from this leadership study to the instructional core, the interplay between the student, the teacher, and the curriculum or the context, the content that students were working with, to encourage both formal leaders, our teachers, our administrators, but also informal leaders, volunteers, other individuals who support the work that takes place in the classroom. So we very much were looking forward to the feedback we received on both those fronts.
The study questions really were in two sections. The first one looked at the ideal characteristics, behaviors, and consequences of leadership. We're on to the next slide there, Dave, study questions. And they literally asked, if you could create the ideal leader, what characteristics would the leader have? How would the leader behave? And what are the benefits of being around this type of leader? And then the second set of questions really posed the question, and this is where the real meat came in our study, how are we doing as a district? And before we posed those questions, we embedded within the study a statement about, we're not just talking about formal leadership, but really the essential role, the wonderful things that anybody, no matter what, where they are in the organization, those wonderful things that people do in their everyday jobs, that really make the place the amazing place it is to be. So we were talking about informal leadership, and we said, what do you do that provides leadership, and how can we help you as an informal leader?
There's no question that there were issues around our leadership practices, and that there's much work yet to be done on this front. Many participant groups were able to provide examples to us of how they engaged in leadership practices, but could not provide a response to how the district supported their leadership. Responses indicated some marginalization of various participant groups in the survey that took place. The structures did not support the way respondents felt leadership should be supported, and didn't feel they had quite the voice that they would have liked to have at the table with respect to their leadership, both formal and informal. This provided a tremendous opportunity for us to move forward in an appreciative inquiry approach, focusing on this, a strengths-based view of all of the employees in our district.
Yeah, I think one of the things, one of the core elements that surfaced through this was some of the strength of the language that was used in the responses, which really pointed out that many of our employee groups felt marginalized from the district. They did not feel connected, and this gave us a very profound starting point from where we, and really the building point from where we've come since then. So we asked the Gandalf Group to do some recommendations for us, and they did. They came up with a couple of very, very good recommendations, which we follow to this day, 4 or 5 years later. The first one, they said, you need to develop a narrative as a district that captures the understanding of leadership that's emerged from these, from the study. And you need to then develop a set of guiding principles, which will be the foundation as you move forward. Secondly, you need to develop processes that encourage the practice of leadership continually and on a daily basis. The people who've really invested themselves in this study need to understand that the district is listening and that we're doing something about this.
Additional recommendations were with respect to understanding of leadership being broadened to include not only formal leaders, as Peter has mentioned, but informal leaders in a more open view of leadership and what takes place in our schools. We also had recommendations with respect to the alignment of professional development that's based on adult learning models. A job-embedded approach, which we have done in terms of, for example, our instructional coach model, where the support for schools is done on-site, embedded in their work, rather than a focus on central workshops or central support. Mentoring of staff in a number of areas, both new teachers, administrators through intern programs, and further job shadowing opportunities for individuals wanting to get a sense of a different role and the opportunity for a different role within the district. Last but not least, the element of choice, ensuring that our professional development sessions were tailored to the individual's place and space along the journey of learning in any given topic area or subject area or skill set.
So we started to explore this concept of a leadership narrative, and we asked the study designers, what do you mean by that? And they said, look, if you go back into the raw data, by the way, this study, I should mention, had a tremendous response. We had 5,500 responses from around our district, which was an absolute, we believe in itself, was an indication of how timely this was. People wanted to have a voice, and they wanted to be heard, and they were heard. And Jennifer, the lady who wrote the study, said you need to go back into that raw data and take a look at some of the wonderful things that people said. They're not just saying we feel marginalized. They're giving you ideas on how to move this ahead so that you can make this district a robust and engaging and a true learning place where children can be. I'm going to read the narrative. It took us months to write this. Leadership is exemplified by people who are able to impact those around them in a positive way. Our leaders are energetic, empathetic, motivated, trustworthy, knowledgeable, and good communicators. Our leaders share a common vision in their commitment to all students. Our leaders understand that their role is one of support. They lead by example, they seek input, and they listen. As an organization, we encourage and foster these qualities. In challenging and prosperous times, we are defined by the relationships we build. We then struggled, actually, for the next part because we wanted to develop a set of guiding principles. And it was at this point, this has been about 3 years ago, that we really, really started to study. We took a look at some of the big ideas globally and the research globally that really spoke about how you develop a culture of engagement, which exemplified what's needed in order to make it healthy and wonderful condition for a learning environment. So the first guiding principle that we stated, Each individual in our organization has unique capacities and ideas that need to be recognized, valued, and tapped into.
By harnessing these individual capacities, the organization will be enriched and invigorated. And this is part of our strategic plan as a district, the engagement of students, staff, parents, guardians, and the broader community. Students through initiatives such as enhancing our connection to our Student Senate. With our parent guardians, we have a speaker series that connects not only our parents and guardians of individual schools, but the broader community to topics of interest and of relevance for parents. And of course, our community partnerships with the rich and diverse array of community agencies that make a link with the district with respect to our goal of reaching and teaching every student.
The culminating effect of harnessing the individual capacities throughout the district will be to achieve a culture of engagement, a vibrant learning culture in which people feel valued and engaged in an environment that systematically promotes ongoing learning through internal and external dialogue.
The learning context provides optimal conditions in which we can teach and reach all of these students, as mentioned. One of our two strategies in our Board Improvement Plan for Student Achievement is creative, innovative, critical thinking, and problem solving. And the creation of those robust tasks and instructional tasks for our students is a key element of the learning that we hope to achieve through the journey of leadership for creativity.
We began to realize that if we were going to message this out to the district, not only to all of the employee groups, but to our schools, to our classrooms, and ultimately to really imbue our schools and classrooms with a joy of learning, we needed to have some vehicles to help us to make this strategically possible. And we focused in on three. The first is the concept of shared and distributed leadership. We've come to understand, I think many people in education and through many other organizations, the world is too complicated where you can have autocratic leadership anymore. The more we can develop the informal leadership of those wonderful ideas that are around us in our departments, in our schools, the more chance we've got of developing really robust learning, creative learning environments.
As part of a ministry initiative entitled the School Effectiveness Framework and the district reviews that take place, which are observations of schools, we've taken an appreciative inquiry approach as another framework that Peter mentioned, in addition to shared leadership, to have a very strengths-based view of our schools, celebrating the successes and the strengths our schools show, and leaving schools with questions for consideration and reflection along their own journey of learning, in addition to those strengths that we celebrated. So it's very much not a deficit model approach to the reviews we do of schools and the supports that we put in place at the school level.
The third vehicle that we've chosen to use to really try to embed these ideas through the district is based upon Margaret Wheatley's 10 Principles of Community. I'm not going to go through those now, but she's a wonderful thinker, and her ideas have huge implications, we believe, for a strength-based approach to strategic planning. So on this journey of embedding a culture of engagement throughout the OCDSB, we developed what we call the Lead the Way event series. One of the things that we did right at the very beginning of this was we took our formal leadership events, and which would traditionally just been for our formal leaders, our principals, senior managers, trustees, vice principals, and we opened them up so that we would invite people from all employee groups, from our diverse community partnerships, our Aboriginal families, and we really, I think, deepened our conversation in doing so.
We modeled and promoted creative learning. For example, at the 2008 Leadership Conference with keynote speaker Sir Ken Robinson, focus on creativity during the conference, we had over 33 student presentations and 50 community leaders engaged in dialogue and discussion and roundtable sessions about creativity in the learning context. This was very infectious, contagious from our district's perspective, and has grown since that time to, as we've continued to engage students and student exhibits in our conferences, as well as involving an increasing number of community members to share and to gain perspective on creativity in a learning context. It's also provided us with the opportunity to make links to various community groups or multicultural community partnerships, Aboriginal partners, and a greater enhancement and link to cultural proficiency as a key element of our district's work.
In April 2010, we brought 700 people together at the Conference Center in Ottawa, 350 from the school district and 350 from outside, and we launched our System Action Research Project, which poses the question, what are the conditions under which creative and healthy individuals and organizations flourish? We believe that if we can identify those conditions, we'll be in a much stronger place to replicate those conditions throughout the district in a strategic manner. The next page just shows some of the critical partnerships and connections that we have developed. It's been quite fascinating. There are so many stories behind these that we couldn't even begin to go into them. But as we've come along our pathway, many other people have approached us to ask to be involved in one way or another. And it's been very, very interesting for us as we move down this journey.
Creativity, innovation, critical thinking, and problem solving are all interconnected with respect to the instructional task or learning activity that our students engage in. And as mentioned, it's one of our two key strategies in the Board Improvement Plan for Student Achievement. We realize the importance of an inclusive, safe, and caring environment where students are able to take risks intellectually, present novel ideas, and have those ideas challenged in a very positive, constructive, supportive way. We've worked and are continuing to work on learning more about innovative and creative inquiry-based classrooms. For example, we've worked with Roger Martin, Dean of the School of Management in Toronto, at their integrated thinking classrooms and had a look and observed some of the classrooms that focus on the big ideas in the curriculum as one example. And as Peter mentioned, much of the action-based research that we're looking at in leadership, we're also applying to a classroom setting to learn more about the link between creativity, innovation, and critical thinking.
And as we move down this road, we're trying to develop also creativity indices against which to inquire into and to explore the potential value of emergent ideas and products. It's very tricky. You want to have an accountability built into this framework because not every novel idea is a good one, of course. We're looking at what sort of indicators we can come up with.
We're all familiar with Bloom's taxonomy as a graphic representation of high-order thinking. The revised Bloom taxonomy that you'll see in the next slide reflects how creativity is relevant to the development of critical thinking in the 21st century. Note the change from nouns to verbs to describe the different levels of the taxonomy. It's an interesting analogy that represents a paradigm shift, an evolution of thought with respect to creativity's place in the thinking paradigm. The shift from remembering of perhaps some basic knowledge and skills through to the analysis, evaluation, and creativity for higher order thinking skills in both processes and products created by students.
So what next? Our director, Dr. Jen Adams, has really, I think, framed out a three-stage approach as we move forward. The first is to maintain our focus on global initiatives, to make sure that we're in touch with the big thinking. So we'll be staying in touch with we are indeed a member of the National Creativity Network, which is affiliated with the World Creativity Forum, and we have multiple national and international partnerships. We need to look at what the ideas are, and then we need to think, what are the implications of that for the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board across our districts, our departments, and our schools?
If you look at the McKinsey & Company report in November 2010, a report based on 20 jurisdictions across the globe that continue as school systems to achieve highly with respect to student achievement and continue to improve, one of the key elements in the McKinsey report in the evolution from moving from poor to fair to good to great to excellent is a shift from converging on some basic standards two at the great to excellent stages, a real focus on innovative practices and peer collaboration around the responsibility and accountability for effective instruction. And so that is one other example of some of the research we're relying on to move our thinking forward in this area.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much. That was very well timed and very well done. And I know that what you are preaching is infectious. The student trustees were talking to me before the meeting about how they had been inspired by the Lead the Way conference. So now we are going to turn it back over to Edmonton for some questions and answers from their side for you to answer for them. Dave, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. And for my colleagues, of course, we'll follow our questions and comment format as we do at regular board meetings. So trustees that are interested in commenting or asking a question, simply join the queue. And I'll begin with Trustee Cleary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is directed to anyone at Ottawa-Carleton District. Jobs of the future will be ones that demand creativity and, of course, collaboration. And how has your board created this climate of creativity and collaboration for the students? Particularly interested in you sharing any specifics of any policy work, building on the research or initiatives, and maybe those student trustees that are there, if they could give an idea of any inspirational moments for the students. Thank you.
Ottawa Carleton.
Superintendent, would one of you like to take this one? To summarize, I think it was how it is implemented in terms of coursework and assignments. Would that be correct, Edmonton?
Yes.
Also a comment from the students as to how they may see it affect them in the classroom. And we have 2 minutes for our answer.
Certainly one of the areas that we're focusing on, and we're working with a number of both expertise internally and externally, for example, Garfield Ginny Newman from the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education is working with a number of teachers in our district with respect to enhancing the nature of our instructional tasks to ensure they're more divergent, open-ended, engaging, applicable in an authentic context that allows students to provide a novel idea, a novel solution. Areas such as band show math, where students are able to provide, working collaboratively, provide a series of solutions that in the consolidation phase, all of the students are able to see the variety of solutions provided, allow for a focus on creativity and collaboration within the classroom context.
And would either of the students like to speak to this one?
So from the perspective of the students, this has been something that, we have been discussing among our peers because, you know, becoming more aware of different learning styles and how, our curriculum really caters to our needs as students is something that, you know, an issue we've been facing. And something that we found that to be really useful in this regard is understanding that assignments, homework and such needs to be a little bit more open in the sense that students, so long as they demonstrate that they have put the effort, that they know that they have understood this concept and that they can demonstrate their learning, whether it be, you know, in written form, you know, or over video in some sort of, you know, artistic way, that the teacher really understands that the student has received the message, learning is happening, and that they're able to express themselves however they wish. And a classroom environment that really can, foster such a creativity is really ideal.
Thank you.
I'm going to remind Ottawa Carleton to take a breath before you speak, because that, unfortunately, the last student's remarks came through pretty well entirely unintelligible. So I'm thinking that's the take a breath approach that should be in place there.
Yeah, the voice compression software that digitizes your voice needs some pauses.
Yeah.
Our director would like to provide a very brief comment as well, Dave.
Okay.
Thank you. One of the things that we're trying to make sure in the district is when we look at student learning and we look at creativity and innovative thinking, We're very deliberate in saying that this is something that should be in all of our classrooms for children from 4 years old all the way to 18-year-olds. So this is not waiting until the later years. It's built all the way through their schooling. I think the second piece that we've done is we've been very deliberate working with the teachers in the classroom on their curriculum documents to ensure that creativity is not the domain of one or two subject areas, that it's embedded across all of our different subject areas. And the advantage we have with the Ontario curriculum now is that critical literacies and critical thinking is built into all of our curriculum documents, and we think that that's helping move us forward.
Thank you for the great question. Back to you, Dave.
Okay, thanks. Well, I'll chime in. Did I hear the comment that the world is too complicated to simply rely on formal leadership? Did I understand that remark correctly?
Well, would the superintendent who made that comment like to elaborate?
Let's say that was a personal perspective.
So that my hearing was correct, I take it.
I believe I may have said that, yes.
Yeah, well, I like that concept a lot, Peter. So at a recent health conference that I attended, someone was asked, a health professional, what was the most important thing we could do in the world of school health to improve the health of children? And the answer was rather surprisingly, evaluate, in order to understand whether what you are doing is having any impact. And so the question I would like to pose to Ottawa-Carleton, when we look at the almost limitless stakeholder groups that your work and creativity has impacted and engaged, where are you at in terms of evaluating what the impact has been on staff morale, student achievement, student buy-in, classroom culture, et cetera?
Superintendent Buffoni?
Certainly, it's a question that we're working our way through to increase the measures by which we can assess the impact of creativity. We do know on two fronts in particular that we see, we feel, we know through our student achievement results that the engagement level when we provide students with robust instructional tasks that allow for creative approaches, where novel ideas are applied to a set of criteria for their value, that students are much more engaged. We see it in terms of our walkthroughs of our classrooms. We also see it in terms of, we feel that it's one of the factors that have kept us improving incrementally in terms of our student achievement. We also know that the engagement of our staff, as well as our broader school community beyond our students, our parents, and our community members is enhanced when we have authentic learning taking place in the classroom that makes connections to our community. So it certainly isn't something we have in a neat box that we're able to measure input and output absolutely directly with a one-to-one correlation, but it's something that we know is impacting our students in a positive way. It's impacting our staff and our broader communities, and we're continuing to find ways to measure that kind of improvement. But in terms of students' achievements, there's no question the focus on creativity and innovation and critical thinking is keeping us moving forward.
Dave, I have about 2 minutes left. Would you like to pose another question?
Any other? I have several questions, but and Catherine is in the queue. Okay, Trustee Ripley.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. You said that you brought people together and asked them the questions. What are the conditions under which creative organizations and individuals flourish? And I'm going to read you a list of six adjectives that are embedded in our mission statement, and I'm just wondering if there is an additional adjective that we've missed. So the adjectives are that at Edmonton Public Schools we'll work with community partners and families to create safe, caring, healthy, equitable, inclusive, and diverse learning environments for our students and staff to work in. And I'm wondering, do you think that is a platform on which creativity can flourish? based on the answer to the question you received.
Superintendent?
Yes, this is Superintendent Peter Gamwell. We're in the midst of this study right now. We haven't had a chance to analyze the data. I think those seven words, those seven adjectives sound absolutely marvelous. I think what we're trying to do is to drill down more specifically. I'll give you an example. What we did is we brought in Sir Ken Robinson last Monday night, and as part of that, we brought in 15 creative initiatives around...
Draw a breath, Peter.
Oh, sorry.
Draw a breath.
Is that better? We brought in 15 creative initiatives from around the district, and we're... It's really difficult to describe. They came from such different areas. We had science, we had music, we had physical education and language. So we're not so much looking at those, at the adjectives, if you will. We're looking at specifically what is it that turns kids onto learning? What is it that turns our custodians onto being the wonderful people they are? Are there certain conditions, like if we provide them with more choice, more freedom to make certain decisions in their work, is that going to help them? If we create more open space for children in the classroom, or if we say to teachers, use those unique capacities that you have in unique ways to really engage with the students. So they're the types of questions and initiatives that we're really trying to drill down to. So I don't know if that answers your question. I just hope it gives you a better idea of what we're doing.
Thank you, Peter. And that concludes our 10 minutes of Q&A. So I'm now going to turn the microphone over to our assistant superintendent, Ms. Tanny Parker, who is assistant superintendent in student learning services. Ms. Parker.
Thank you very much, Board Chair. I just want to start with a quick apology to my board. I'm presenting tonight with my back to them, which seems a little bit odd, but certainly want to be facing Ottawa Carleton, so apologies. And good evening. I'm pleased to be able to provide to you this evening a few broad examples of how the Board of Trustees at Edmonton Public Schools has demonstrated creativity as a board in pursuit of developing high-quality policy and process to meet the needs of our families and community. I will provide examples of creativity in the following areas: governance, operations, and educational programming. There are many examples of how our boards, past and present, have been creative through governance in response to changes in our environment. Sometimes the pressure to adapt comes from legislation. Other times it's more grassroots and is driven by the needs of our community. Regardless of where the catalyst for change begins, our board has and continues to be flexible and creative in finding processes that allow our district to continually evolve and refine itself. I will highlight one example. In 2007, following the closure of two schools, the board at the time, dissatisfied with the process and impact of school closures, created an ad hoc committee to examine alternatives. The committee struggled with understanding NIMBY, not in my backyard effect, versus the opinions and perspectives of those that might not have children or those who might not be faced with a potential school closure. The committee began to have dialogue about what they thought were competing values in the discussion. These included questions such as, is having a school in a community more important than the programming that the school can offer? As a question such as this cannot be answered by a standard survey or engagement method, the board requested that a discrete choice or forced choice survey be administered. Very briefly, in a discrete choice survey, respondents are asked to rate a list of attributes from most to least important. Depending on the ratings, the next question asks respondents to compare some attributes from the former question with some new attributes. As respondents continue to rate their preferences, they begin to make trade-offs, and what they truly value is revealed. I will not go into great detail of all of what the survey revealed to us, but will mention, because it is relevant to the conversation today, that the respondents believed that schools should focus on, quote, the development of creativity, critical thinking, and adaptability in our students. I'm highlighting this process for two reasons. Number one, this was the first time this type of survey had been used in an Alberta school district and is clearly an example of a forward-thinking and creative board. Number two, the information from the survey was used to help to create a new engagement process related to school space, and it was used to inform some of the work of our current board. Following trustee elections last fall, the board reviewed the mission, vision, and priorities of the district through extensive consultation with community, parents, staff, and students. Our current vision statement reads, "All students will learn to their full potential and develop the ability, passion, and imagination to pursue their dreams and contribute to their community." The new vision captures what was heard during consultation and was substantiated by the results of the discrete choice survey. The message is clear. Creativity is important to our district. Edmonton Public School District has a history of creative responses to changes that impact our operations in the district. Over 30 years ago, as you know, Edmonton Public introduced open boundaries and alternative programs. These decisions were based on two key beliefs that I'd like to quote from our foundational documents. First, quote, that the needs of a pluralistic society can best be met by an educational system that reflects the plurality and by providing parent and student choice in determining learning experiences. And secondly, quote, basic to our democratic beliefs is the right for individual to live according to their own values and determine their own course of development, unquote. Those beliefs are still held by our board and may be even more true today as the nature of our community continues to change. Subsequent boards have approved the development and implementation of new alternative programs, and these programs provide different paths for students to achieve academic and personal success. These programs are one way that we as a district support creativity and educational programming in Edmonton Public Schools. The decision to expand alternative programs was operational as it was linked to changes in legislation, but it was also an educational response because we were aware that parents were looking for programs that allowed for the presentation of our curriculum in different ways and with different perspectives than mainstream presentation. We are proud of the many ways that our district encourages and fosters creativity, innovation, inquiry, and problem solving in our schools. The Arts Core Alternative Program at two schools and three campuses sees an infusion of the arts into the school community and into all subject areas. Students in these schools are able to express themselves through the arts, which allows for new interpretations and expressions of the curriculum. The Arts Core program is also a motivator for these students, as it allows them to see and represent their learning in ways that make sense to them. Other programs that support the development of problem solving and critical thinking and creativity operate with not arts at the center, but inquiry. The Child Study Center has such a program. Through a 40-year partnership with the University of Alberta, inquiry-based learning is nurtured in students from kindergrades, kindergarten to grade six. Providing educational opportunities where students are taught how to ask critical questions, research, and then report their findings are important skills in the development of creativity and innovation. It is important to note that all our schools, whether they have an official alternative program or not, look for creative and innovative ways to engage students in their learning. The work around creativity and innovation is being echoed at the provincial level. Alberta Education, in its 2010 document called Inspiring Action on Education, has identified critical thinking and problem solving, creativity and innovation as two of the competencies of an educated Albertan. As the direction from Alberta Education unfolds, and we are provided with the details of how these and other competencies will be developed, implemented, and measured, rest assured that our board will continue to look for creative and innovative ways to provide vision and leadership to ensure we are continuing to evolve to meet the needs of our ever-changing community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Jennifer, over to you for Q&A.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. That was very great to hear. We have a list of questioners, starting with Trustee John Shea.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for your presentation. It was very interesting. I've long known about Edmonton Public Schools as a school board where there's open boundaries, and that it sort of has a history of that. I think that's well known throughout the country. And I guess my question to you, and you discussed it a little bit, was, and it has to do with how you grapple with open boundaries. In our board, we used to have a transfer system that was much more liberal in the sense that it provided quite a bit more choice to students in which school they would attend. And what we saw was that it created almost like a two-tier system where you had have and have-not schools, or I should say the pronouncement between have and have-not schools was much more substantial than it is now. And as I said, we've gone the way where we've become more restrictive in transfers and fostering a community school type concept. So my question to you is how have you, I guess, again, grappled with that over a number of decades, I suppose, in Edmonton?
Thank you for the question, and I will start, and I'm sure our superintendent would like to supplement. I think that part of my response will be part of what was just mentioned, is that open boundaries and alternative programs have been part of who we are for many years. So even though only approximately 50% of students attend the school in their attendance area, the school that they're actually assigned to, the distribution of students becomes more or less equal. When we look at location of our alternative programs, we look for a couple of things. We look for putting programs close to where the students live, and we also look at finding schools where there is space to run both an alternative program and a regular program. So in most of our cases, we are running a dual track program, two tracks in one school, because we believe that the alternative program and the regular program complement each other. So I'm thinking that it's just been over time that we've been able to rationalize how we accommodate students in our space.
Mr. Superintendent, a brief supplement?
Yes, thank you. And that is to say that a recent study done, well, recent in the last 6 years, in Edmonton asked the question, or a series of questions, but they revolved around the concept of how do parents select schools given the range of choices they have within Edmonton. And it was interesting to note that about 44% of the respondents indicated that location was actually their first priority, despite the fact that many of our families do not attend their neighborhood school. They attend other regular programs or community-based programs for a whole variety of reasons related to perhaps childcare, related to where the parents themselves had gone to school, a whole range of options. And then about another 40% then chose the curriculum as the key deciding point. And that would then speak to our second language programs or pedagogical programs that Ms. Parker has already decided. So this seems to indicate that in our attempting to be in our way of being responsive to parent and community demands, we feel that that at the end of the day, it seems to balance out in terms of options and programs available to our parents.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent.
I have three more questioners and six minutes, so maybe we'll go one and one if that works for everybody, and I'll go to Trustee Seward for the next question.
Thank you very much, Edmund, and thank you for that excellent presentation. My question is with respect to the relationship between choice and creativity, which you have talked about in your presentation. And I couldn't help but notice as I was drinking my coffee this morning that there was a very favorable article in the Globe and Mail with respect to the whole issue of choice and competition. Can you comment on how your actions as a board fit within the broader provincial issue of choice and provincial funding for a range of schools, not only those that would fall under the rubric of what we call public schools? Thank you.
Thank you, and that's an excellent question. I think, first of all, the provision of choice for our community, and I should say that it would be representative of communities within Edmonton City, is fundamentally about educational options and has little to do with competition per se. But over time, as it has been developed, people talk about choice as competitive advantage and in those terms, and we don't find that particularly helpful because it still is fundamentally about the ways in which children learn and the ways in which families support their learning, and that we want to, that there are multiple paths of getting to those, that endpoint of high school completion. So having said that, within the province of Alberta, there is indeed a view from Alberta Education that public education falls into the category of what we are as a district, public schooling, but it also includes Catholic separate school education under the umbrella of public schools. And the government would also say that the provision of charter schools as another choice and option falls within the public education system, given that charter schools are fully funded publicly. And so within the province of Alberta, there has been quite an emphasis placed on the provision of choices and availability of schooling for students. These are just some of them, and there are certainly others. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two more questioners and not a lot of time on the clock. Trustee Kavanaugh, can you narrow down the scope of your question as much as you can?
Of course. It's only about governance, so how long can it take?
Governance.
I heard governance as one of the first things on your list. So I just wanted to ask you, since we're dealing with that very same issue, how you've tackled that issue and how you came up with your governance model. Thank you.
I missed the first part of the question.
Here, Mike.
I missed the first part of the question, not so much the preamble, but when you were just opening the question up.
What model have you chosen for governance, and what were some of the key factors in 60 seconds or less?
Well, there was a time when I can remember my first year on the board, I asked that of the long-serving trustee, do we have the Carver model? And he said, no, we don't really have a Carver model. And I said, well, what model do we have? And he said, well, it's kind of a hybrid of a whole bunch of models. To be quite honest, I could talk, and all of my colleagues could talk in some details about how governance looks, and that may very well be the focus of our next conversation. But I'm not that familiar with the theory of governance. I've just responded to the working environment that has been in place since we joined the board. I've just had a colleague share with me that we embrace a model of policy governance. I wouldn't disagree with that, but I'm not sure where that ranks in the world of the Carver model or other models of governance. Mr. Superintendent, did you want to offer anything on this front?
Thank you. Only to say that policy governance does fall in line with the Carver model, although there are aspects of the Carver model that have not been fully embraced by this board in past and present, but it is definitely a policy governance model that we are operating under.
Thank you. Jennifer?
Well, thank you very much. I think from our perspective, we need to have a conversation as a board as to what areas of that we are exploring here tonight we'd like to look into further. So I'll just turn to Trustee Curry for our last question.
Thank you for that. Hopefully this will be quick. I'm assuming the camera's over here. Dave, you and I had a conversation this summer about the monitoring role of a board. So again, this is a governance question. And I talked to you about our report that we received from our Learning Support Services Department, which is special education in sort of Canadian terms. And it had in it a number of amazing pieces of information for the board on performance measures, our logic model, quality program indicators, program reviews, our wait lists, what our different departments and learning support services were doing in terms of completing assessments. That is only one report we have asked for, but you shared with me that you as a board have asked for many different yearly reports in terms of ensuring that you're performing your monitoring function as a board and ensuring that your departments are meeting the strategic plan goals or the district goals for the year. I was just wondering if you could describe to the rest of the trustees what that really looks like.
Sure. Well, I think we all accept, I'm sure in Ottawa, Carleton, and boards across the country, that one of our primary responsibilities is to monitor outcomes and ensure that we're on the right path. We do have annual reports that come to the board, but the board decided to deepen the accountability and level of reporting and identified a number of subject areas in which we asked our administration to bring forward annual reports. They will begin this year on issues such as equity, health, certainly special needs, Aboriginal education, et cetera, and that these reports will be scheduled on our district website at a timing that will allow parents and community members to really look at our website and know that a number of important areas of our work will be reported on at regular intervals throughout the year. And so a special needs parent, for example, would be able to see in the fall that the special needs report is coming to board in March and mark that on their calendar and be satisfied that there will be a thorough report on special needs education. And the particular focus that we identified that we wanted to see these reports take is to examine growth, which of course is going to involve spin-off considerations of challenges and success. But we want to know as a board, when we look at a number of important areas of our work and the district work, whether we're actually making inroads and continuing to experience growth and better meeting the needs of our student population. So we're looking forward to those considerably larger number of annual reports being rolled out to the board this year and the scheduling of those reports being publicly identified on our website in a timely manner.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. No, those were great questions, and obviously there's a lot more for us to explore. I think, Dave, if you agree that I'll just go through thanking some of the people at our end who have helped put this evening together. I'd like to thank our technical staff, Dave Miller, Monica Cheskia, John McKinnon, Bruce Fraser, and the others who have sat through a couple of rehearsals here with me tonight. And as well to Jennifer Adams and her senior team who have helped put together our presentation and provided all the support and technical capability to the evening. And I think that's everybody at our end. And thank you very much, Dave, for all the work.
Thank you, Jennifer. By the way, how was our audio feed tonight?
I think we had a few similar challenges to the ones that you had with us, but generally I think it was good and we comprehended most of what you had to say tonight.
Okay, well, thank you very much to your board and your staff for that unique and informative hour. I think these kinds of exchanges are only going to grow in quality and depth of conversation, and I'm sure within 5 years it will be quite commonplace across the country for boards to be collaborating using technology. And I do want to take a few minutes to acknowledge the work of our staff, our administration, and our IT people who have really put a considerable number of hours into ensuring that this event takes place with the best technology that we can put on the table. As for next steps, Jennifer and I have agreed that, we have determined as two boards that we are committed to two of these meetings. So this is meeting number one, and I will be in communication with the Ottawa-Carleton board chair in the weeks to come, and I would look forward to our second meeting taking place in the spring of 2012. So with that, Ottawa-Carleton, thank you, Godspeed, and have a productive board meeting tonight.
Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon and evening.
And with that, this meeting is adjourned.